Yeah. Okay.
Hello. Merry Christmas,
everybody, and welcome to Ghoul Society.
That's my big sister, Jamie.
And that's my little sister, Sarah. We are grateful to be recording on the unceded stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples, whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests on this land, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
Christmas version. Sorry, guys. I'm sick.
Sarah's sick.
Again.
I think I'm getting sick between Sarah, Bristol, Montana, and all the hundreds of germs of cesspool within my workplace.
Yeah. I do feel better than yesterday, though.
That's good.
Yeah.
And also, we went out for our Christmas dinner, family dinner last night.
Yeah. Oh my God, so much good.
It was so good. I'm just going to take a sec to talk about it. We went to Hank's, a restaurant. It's in Victoria. Mm-hmm. Shout out. They do this thing where it's like all the menu changes all the time, and a lot of it is local farm ingredients. And they also do this thing where if you say, like, let them choose, then they'll bring you, like, a 6-course meal with different things from the menu.
And the portions, they're not small, guys.
They're not small.
They're, like, regular
portions. And honestly, it's a good deal. It's $60 a person to do that.
Yeah.
But it's, like,
so much food. And if you don't eat it all, you get to take it home.
Yeah, which I didn't know that they would let that, just because sometimes, like,
they don't.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm, of course they should, and they would, because otherwise they throw it away. So it's
it's
so stupid. It's like, of course you should. I feel like that's more like buffet rules. Like, you can't take buffet stuff home.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also stupid. But anyways, it was very delicious. Mm-hmm. It was a really lovely, wonderful night. Mm-hmm. Though we did not start dinner until 8:30 p.m.
Yeah.
That's so, my bedtime.
Yeah. So we got home after 11.
Yeah.
Like 12.
Yeah. And so now I've had 2 midnight nights in a row, and I'm so tired.
Yeah.
But we're going to bring the sauce to you today.
Oh, that sauce with the burger was
so good. So good. So I wish I wasn't so full at the burger point.
I know.
I would have actually ate it like a burger instead of just eating the insides.
Yeah.
It's the holidays.
Yeah, I'm wearing my snowman vest.
I love that. I'm wearing my Bailey Sarian Suspish hoodie and my pajama pants.
Yeah, I got some of my Christmassy earrings out, so I'll probably wear those this week at work.
Me too.
Yay. Love. And then Jamie and I get some time off together, which will be nice. We're going to go skating at the
rec center.
And I think that a bunch of us should go walk around the neighborhood and look at lights.
Yep.
And we get to spend some time with our mom again.
Yeah.
We'll probably do some market. Oh, yeah. There was that holiday market.
Yes, we went to a holiday market.
No, there's that one that we're going to go to as well.
Oh, we're going to go to another one. Yes, there's a Indigenous pop-up holiday market. For those of you who live in the area, it's not at Hillside Mall, but it's on Hillside Ave somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where. Oh. This is a bad plug, but you can look it up. I think it's like Indigenous YYJ Holiday Market. They've already had 2 in November, and then the last one is on December 20th. So
we're going to go to that.
We're going to go to that. Should be super good.
So it's going to be difficult because there's going to be so much beautiful work.
I know. And so many earrings.
So many earrings.
And I love collecting earrings.
Jamie's collection of beaded earrings is slowly growing.
It's growing.
Jamie has so many earrings.
I know.
You get that from our Oma.
True. Very true.
She was an earring queen.
Better earring situation.
Stand. Like in your, oh, I thought you meant like in your ears. I was like, what?
No, it's fine. It's fine. Well, I guess that's all our updates. We are bringing to you some holiday creeps and spooks.
But also mine aren't even really creepy.
Oh, okay.
Mine are just holiday figures.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I like that. Would you like to start?
Sure. So my first holiday character figure, she is called La Befana.
Yes.
And she's a witch-like figure in Italian folklore who delivers presents to children on Epiphany Eve, which is January
6th.
5th.
Oh.
Eve.
Oh.
Epiphany is January 6th, yes.
Yes, okay.
Epiphany Eve, for those who don't know, is a Christian feast day that celebrates the visit of the three wise men and the baptism of Jesus.
Awesome.
Yeah. La Befana is described as having ember eyes, sharp feline-like teeth, a sharp tongue, and she has a lot of soot on her face from entering people's homes through chimneys. She's often described as an ugly old woman.
Okay.
And she wears...
Fucking rude.
wears rags, a headscarf, and carries either a broom and a sack or a basket where she holds her presents.
Oh. Yeah. Wait, so she's bringing presents?
Yeah.
Oh. So she's nice.
Yes. She's okay. Just like an old woman.
Why are they calling her old and ugly?
Listen, sometimes people are like, she's old and ugly. Other times they're like, she's just an older woman.
Right. So, okay. You know. Yeah.
In traditional Italian folklore, she leaves the mountain caves where she lives, like the Grinch, and rides on her broom backwards to bring good children toys and candy and coal or sticks to bad children.
Mmm.
While some stories may depict her as evil, she's most commonly viewed as the quote-unquote Christmas witch and is loved by all.
Love that.
Oftentimes, in more rural or poor parts of Italy, La Befana would bring bad children a stick to put in their stocking rather than coal. So if you woke up on Christmas Day and there was a stick in your stocking...
Yikes.
You were a bad kid.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That fucking suck.
Yeah. It said that as she leaves each home, she sweeps the floor with her broom. And many people believe this is a sign of her sweeping away the problems of the year.
Aww.
To enter the new year.
Bro, I love her.
Yeah. She's actually, like, really cute and...
Yeah.
I kind of want to be her.
I love that.
It's heavily debated where La Befana gets her name from. Many people believe it comes from the Feast of Epiphany and the Italian version of the Greek word Epiphania. Others believe that the name is derived from Bestrina, which are gifts associated with the goddess Strenia. And she's the goddess of the new year, well-being, and, like, purification.
Cool.
Because she, like, sweeps away the problems of the previous year.
Right.
Although La Befana has many different names throughout Italy, such as Vecchia, or old woman, and Striga, which means witch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like those Strigas in The Witcher.
Yeah, that's what I thought of. I was like, wait. If you know, you know. An Italian folklorist named Giuseppe Pitre calls her Calcavecchia, or the old woman of Christmas.
Hmm.
There are written records of La Befana that go as far back as the Middle Ages, and she's actually often seen as the Italian counterpart to Perchta.
Oh, yeah.
Which Jamie covered on last year's Christmas episode.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cute.
And of course, my favorite folklore writers had to get in on the La Befana train. Jacob Grimm of the famed Grimm Brothers. and he believed that the legend of Labafana was likely pre-Christian and was thus blended with Epiphany as a holiday throughout time.
I have one like that too.
Mm-hmm. Within the pre-Christian thought, Labafana is a goddess of some kind.
Right.
And Jacob Grimm called her a misshapen fairy. And he's the one who saw her being similar to Perchta. Although many cultures have been proposed as her origin, such as Roman, Celtic, Neolithic farmers, and even Paleolithic hunter-gatherers.
Wow.
But we don't know for sure. And there is a legend associated with Labafana that comes from the Christian origins, if that's what you believe, if she's not pre-Christian. And it goes like this. Bafana was in her cottage sweeping the floor when she saw a bright light in the night sky outside her window. She paused to look at it and quickly returned to cleaning up. After the star appeared, she was visited by the three kings who had wandered from their path toward the stable in Bethlehem where Jesus was born. They asked Bafana for directions and told her that they were following the star in the sky on the advice of some astrologers and wanted to bring gifts for Jesus. They invited Bafana to go with her, although she declined because she didn't want to leave her housework unfinished.
Relatable.
Yeah. But she did house the three kings for the night. The next morning, when the three kings were leaving, she had a change of heart and ran after them with her broom and basket of small gifts for the Holy Child, or Jesus, but failed to catch up with them.
Aww.
Since then, it's thought that Labafana has been wandering the earth searching for Jesus and leaves gifts for children in hopes that they might be the holy baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she's just trying to find Jesus.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, I think it's kind of... kind of a cute
that's
one.
Sweet. Yeah. That's very sweet.
So on the night of Epiphany Eve, in many parts of Italy, a practice called mumming takes place, wherein dolls are made of Labafana and effigies are burnt and bonfires are lit in her name.
Cool.
Apparently, groups of men called Befanotti in the Italian countryside will travel from home to home to collect food for themselves and Labafana in exchange for performing a song called Labafana. Sometimes skits and other entertainment like dancing are also performed on January 5th. And these men, the Befanotti, were traditionally the poorest in the village because the function of them was to provide those who had little food with fat and protein-rich foods to survive the winter.
Nice.
And this is still a practice in some regions in Italy, although the men don't have to be poor anymore to participate. Because it used to be that if you were rich, you weren't allowed.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. What I think is precious is that some people leave out a small glass of wine and a plate with some snacks for Labafana for when she visits on the night of Epiphany Eve.
Oh my God. It's probably like really yummy meat and cheese.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh. I just realized I never got cheese yesterday when we were at the market.
Oh, I got really good cheese.
I know. I was going to get some and then I got distracted.
By the baklava.
Yeah.
Shit. Damn. In 1977, the Italian government canceled the holiday of Epiphany as it was, quote, more lavishly celebrated than Christmas.
But why is that bad?
Because the country was really poor during this time. Like, the economy was really bad during this time.
And they were like,
they were like, cancel Epiphany. No more. No more Epiphany.
Wow.
This led the Pope at the time to say, quote, poor Befana, she's a refugee. She seeks shelter now on the first Sunday after the feast, which was her own, end quote. The holiday was eventually reinstated in 1985 and continues to be celebrated.
Damn.
So
wait, I'm just a little confused. Yeah. Why would the government cancel it? Is the government the one providing, like, food?
No, and stuff? I think that I don't really know exactly why the government canceled it. It's the like articles were just like people went out so hard, like harder than Christmas.
Yeah. But wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, I don't really get it.
I don't get it either.
I don't know. The Italian government was just like, guys.
Maybe people were like going into debt.
Yeah, like I think.
Okay, that would actually make sense. If they're like going so hard that they're going into debt and then they're struggling to like pay off the like, debt. Like
probably.
And then the banks are like, we're not getting our money back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like okay. I think it was really crazy.
Sounds so fun.
Yeah. And then I forgot to mention that there was this other folklorist named John Forsdyke that said that La Befana has become the representative of the evil influences that are destroyed on the 12th night of Christmas.
What?
I don't know.
Okay. I know, I kind of felt that with my stuff too. Like, I would read something and I would be like,
what the hell?
This isn't making sense to me.
Yeah, a lot of people have a lot of different ideas about who La Befana is.
I feel that with all my holiday stories.
And every year in the town of Urbania in Italy, where La Befana is thought to be from, they hold a national La Befana festival between January 2nd and January 6th. During this time, the post office has a special mailbox reserved for letters to La Befana, much like Santa. And in central Rome, a large market is held every year between Christmas and Epiphany, where toys, fun, coal candy, and other goodies are on sale. There's even a superstition that on January 6th at midnight... Wait, that wouldn't make sense.
January 5th at midnight, maybe?
Yeah, probably. She shows herself in a window where the market is held, and people often go to try to see her. Throughout the world where large Italian communities are, there are other traditions for La Befana. For example, in Toronto, a Befana choir shows up in the Kensington Market Lights Parade on the winter solstice.
Damn.
And people often dress in La Befana costumes and give candy to small kids as they dance throughout the streets in Toronto.
That's so fun.
And that's really all I know about La Befana. And
that's
she's great. A
that's
cool,
quite a bit.
Yeah, she's a cool witch.
Yeah, I love that.
Christmas.
Wow, very cool.
Cool Christmas witch.
Christmas witch.
Yeah.
Love her. Okay, yeah. She can come to our house too.
Yeah. Yours, first one?
Mine are going to be a lot less dense than that, I think.
Okay.
But my first one is about Père Fouettard. Père Fouettard is part of a French legend from long, long, long ago. He is a man with a sinister face, scraggly, unkempt hair, and a long beard. His dark robes emphasize his dark nature, and he carries a wicker basket that is large enough to fit little children.
Oh.
He's armed with a whip, a large stick, a bundle of switches, like twigs.
Wait.
And this creature works side by side with Saint Nick. On Saint Nicholas Day...
Wait, what's he called?
Père Fouettard. That's how it's said
where
to
is
pronounce.
Where?
France.
Well, my next one is awfully similar.
And on Saint Nicholas That's Day... Funny. He will dispense lumps of coal and or beatings to children.
On December 6th?
Yeah, such as spankings with his whip to naughty children who don't deserve gifts on this day. So the name itself is French for Father Whipper or Old Man Whipper, which makes sense because of the whip that he is apparently seen with.
Right.
And the origin of this creature is as follows. The story was first told around the year 1252.
Whoa.
So, she fucking old. Okay. Père was thought to be an innkeeper or a butcher, but it kind of depends on which tale you follow. Legend has it that Père captured three boys who appeared to be wealthy and on their way to a religious boarding school. Of course.
Okay.
Because the pure-hearted children are always the ones in danger. Yeah. Per and his wife decided to kill the children in order to rob them. And in one version of the story, they drugged the children. This is a little violent. Okay. Slit their throats, cut them into pieces, and stewed them or pickled them in a barrel.
Like in Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah. Okay. However, somehow, around the time that it was, like December 6th-ish, St. Nicholas heard about this situation, and he discovered the children, and he resurrected them. I don't know how, but he put them back together, and he brought them back to life.
Damn!
Per repented, and he became St. Nick's partner. However, Per was still tasked with enacting punishments to children on St. Nicholas Day. Another story of Per Futar states that during the siege of Metz, which is a city in eastern France, in 1552, an effigy of King Charles V was burned and dragged throughout the city. Meanwhile, an association of tanners created a grotesque character of a tanner who is armed with a whip and bound in chains who punished children. I don't know why they were making this character. Maybe just for fun. I'm not sure.
The hell?
But after... After the city was liberated, the charred effigy and the tanner character were combined into what's now known as Per Futar. These events coincided with the passage of St. Nicholas, hence this creature becoming the henchman to St. Nick.
Okay.
That's the story.
Wow.
That's it. That's all I've got on Per Futar.
Damn. Okay. Well, do you want to meet Per Futar's German counterpart?
Yes.
Belschnickel.
Oh, yeah.
They're literally the same.
Yeah.
But I don't really know Belschnickel's origin.
Which is also similar to Krampus, too.
Yes. Yeah. So Belschnickel comes from southern Germany.
Southern
Germany. And it is now more commonly associated with Pennsylvania Dutch communities.
Got it.
Specifically in the United States. But Belschnickel is a grubby, grimy gift bringer. And it's thought that he's...
Well,
he's based on your figure.
Okay, but here's the thing. Mine didn't bring gifts. Mine stole children away and put them in his basket.
How would necked?
Knight?
Yeah.
Knocked. Necked?
I don't know.
Knight?
Knight
is probably necked. Is it German?
Yes.
Yeah. We're off our game today because the December socials have destroyed us already.
Necked Ruprecht.
Nice. That's a nice throat massage.
Yeah. So anyway,
Necked Ruprecht.
Probably like siblings with yours.
Okay.
Who was
their sisters, not twins.
Yeah, because Necked Ruprecht was a servant of Saint Nick. So
same.
Same. Yeah. However, Belschnickel doesn't accompany Saint Nick, and he visits your home by himself. So he's gonna freaking come for you.
Wait, is Belschnickel the same as McNecked?
He's based on...
Oh, I see.
Necked Ruprecht.
Okay.
Yeah, Belschnickel is newer.
Got it.
Maybe he's probably just nicer.
Oh.
Maybe they were just like, listen, these other guys, they're a little too evil.
Yeah, probably.
But some people see him as a combination of, like, Santa and Krampus, who you did talk about last Christmas as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's often ragged and wears furs, and he's depicted as wearing a fur cap with bells on it. His clothes are tattered and dirty, and he carries a switch in his hand.
A switchblade?
No, like...
A Nintendo Switch?
No, like a stick.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
But it's more just like a whip that is made out of wood.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could imagine that. Like, imagine like a willow, like a willow branch, but probably like a hazel branch.
Yeah. And he uses it to hit bad children. Good. But he also carries candy and other goodies for the good children. And it's thought that his name comes from the German word Pels or Belzen, roughly translating to fur, and nickel, which refers to Saint Nicholas or Santa. So he's Fur Santa. Really?
Furry Santa.
Yes. Belschnickel is said to have originated in the Palatinate region of Germany. In the 1800s, there was a large immigration.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. In the 1800s, there was a large immigration to what is now known as Pennsylvania, which is on the traditional territories of the Lenape and Susquehannock nations. And the tale of Belschnickel followed them as the character who visits homes before Christmas Day to check in on children's behavior. Traditionally, he would show up 1 to 2 weeks prior to Christmas and would incite fear in children who knew they had behaved poorly.
Oh, God.
According to legend, Belschnickel would knock on people's doors or windows with his stick or whip, and children would have to answer a question posed by him, or they would have to sing him a song, and in exchange, he would toss candies on the floor.
Wow.
If the kids jumped to the candy too eagerly, they would get hit.
Okay, all of these stories, I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, but all of these stories are just about keeping kids in line.
Yeah, truly.
Like,
yeah.
It's kind of fucked up.
Santa Claus is watching.
Yeah, literally.
In this version of Belschnickel, the father or eldest son of each family was often working outside or was seeing to another matter when Belschnickel would arrive.
Mm.
So the father of the, like, man of the house wasn't there.
Right.
I don't know. On the eve of the Feast of Saint Nick, known as Belschnickel Night, men would run in groups with masks and costumes on. This is called Belschnickeling. It's considered a good-natured occasion and is nice. Observed in parts of Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, and some communities in Santa Catarina in Brazil.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How to get over there?
I don't know. Maybe there was a large German immigration to that part of Brazil.
Hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Once the men were dressed up, they would...
Sorry, I was just thinking, actually, maybe that makes sense. Like, maybe during World War II.
Yeah.
People are just, like,
maybe
getting
that.
The fuck out of there.
Yeah, that's true.
Hmm. But to Brazil. Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Once the men were dressed up, they would go from home to home, and each homeowner would try to guess the men's identity under the masks. If they were right, the men had to remove their mask, but if they were wrong, the Belschnickler would keep on the mask until the group went inside for some drinks. The homeowners would often offer candies or small cakes, and after a quick chat, the Belschnicklers would move on to the next house.
That's so fun.
Yeah. They're Damn. Just going around the community.
We gotta do some Belschnickeling.
Yeah.
I love it.
When I was doing my research on the famed Wikipedia, it notes a 19th century firsthand account of the Belschnickel tradition in the U.S. that was found in a collection of essays written by a man named Jacob Brown. And the collection is called Brown's Miscellaneous Writings.
Okay.
Wherein he writes that they did not hear of Santa, but they were visited by another man. He was known as Kris Kringle, Belschnickel, and sometimes the Christmas Woman. Children not only saw the mysterious person, but felt him, or rather his stripes upon their back with his switch.
Whoa.
The annual visitor would make his appearance some hours after dark, thoroughly disguised, especially the face, which would sometimes be covered with a hideous, ugly fizz, generally wore a female garb, hence the name Christmas Woman. Sometimes it would be a veritable woman, but with a masculine force and action. He or she would be equipped with an ample sack about the shoulders filled with cakes, nuts, and fruits, and a long hazel switch, which was supposed to have some kind of a charm in it.
Called it hazel.
As well as a sting.
Okay.
One hand would scatter the goodies upon the floor.
And the other would whip the children.
And then the scramble would begin by the delighted children. And the other hand would ply the switch upon the backs of the excited youngsters.
Oh my God.
Who would not show a wince. But had it been parental discipline, there would have been screams to reach a long distance. That was written by Jacob Brown.
Okay. That's so funny.
Yeah. So that's what I found out about Belschnickel. And I know that a lot of people listening are like, I know Belschnickel from the American version of The Office in an episode titled Christmas, wherein Dwight dresses as Belschnickel and says, cheer or fear, Belschnickel is here. And then he goes on to tell each character if they've been impish or admirable.
Oh my God.
Based on how he judged their behavior for the year.
What a good show.
Yeah.
I think I have to revisit The Office. I never finished it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. So that's Belschnickel.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I am going to tell you about the legend of Lucy. Do you know about Lucy?
No. Who's Lucy?
According to Viking and Nordic folklore, Lucy was a dark and powerful figure associated with both the winter solstice and December 13th, also known as Lucinata or Lucy Night. So some things were saying, like, it's always about December 13th, but then it would be, like, the longest night of the year. And I was like, that's not the longest night of the year. The longest night of the year is the solstice, which is the 21st.
Yeah.
But they would be calling the 13th the solstice. And then I was like, is it different in different parts of the world? No. I looked it up. It's not. So
maybe they were confused.
Maybe. Or maybe it's changed over time. I don't know.
Maybe that's what they thought in their culture.
Yeah.
And then it was observed differently.
I guess so. But like Viking, Nordic, pagan, Celtic, it's like all kind of connected. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Confused.
Who knows? But okay, so Lucy. Lucy was said to be a demonic woman, a fearsome witch, or a spirit who would ride through the air accompanied by her evil followers called the Luciferda. Some believe that this is an echo of the myth of the wild hunt, which is called Oskoria in Scandinavia and is found across Northern, Western, and Central Europe.
I was going to cover the wild hunt.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. Like, I saw it too. And I thought about it, but...
Yeah, and then I just thought of The Witcher again.
I know. I know. It's pretty cool that it's, like, actually things in it are rooted in, like, true folklore.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Between Lucy Night and Yule, so between the 13th and the 23rd, often closer to the 21st, trolls and evil spirits were thought to be active outside, which meant it was dangerous to be out during these nights, but especially on Lucy Night. Children who had done mischievous things leading up to this had to be extra careful during this time, since Lucy could come down through the chimney and take them away.
No.
Yeah. It's always taking children away. Additionally, certain tasks of work in the preparation for Yule had to be finished, or else Lucy would come to punish the household. So if they didn't, like, prepare for Yule properly, she was like, no.
Damn. Type A.
Yeah, a little bit. So to guard oneself and the household against evil, people began the tradition of Lucivaca, in which people would stay awake throughout the whole Lucy night. This tradition is actually still practiced through the modern version of it, which is to have a party from night until daybreak. So essentially just having a party on the night of December 13th.
Okay.
As Christianity spread in Scandinavia, Lucy's association with December 13th merged with the veneration of Saint Lucia, a Christian martyr from Sicily. Saint Lucia, with Lucia being derived from the Latin lux, meaning light, was known for bringing aid to persecuted Christians in the catacombs. Mm. She wore a crown of candles to light the way.
That's sick.
Yeah. A crown of candles sounds really dangerous, but...
That would look so cool.
It would look cool, but your hair... Over time, Nordic Lucy and Saint Lucia blended into modern Swedish celebrations of Sankta Lucia, which is a festival of light that symbolizes the return of brightness in the darkest nights of the winter. Wow. So this is still celebrated, and people still have those long Lucivaka parties on the night of December 13th. So nice. That's the legend of Lucy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I like her.
Yeah.
She's a Christmas witch, too.
Yeah.
Lots of Christmas witches.
Yeah. Very fitting.
Very fitting.
Yeah, for this podcast.
Yeah, it's true. This is about the Kalikantzaras.
Never heard of it.
Kalikantzaras.
Okay. Yeah.
They are a group of malevolent goblins and demons from Greece who are thought to live underground and come out during the holidays to wreak havoc and steal children, but also steal sweets.
Damn.
That's very different things, but they love them both.
Okay.
Their physical appearance has been described in many ways. They may be brown and hairy with burning red eyes, goats or donkeys' ears, tongues that hang out, beastly limbs and paws, or they might have monkey arms, horse or donkey-like feet or hooves. They are almost always male, and often they have like prominent sexual organs. Regardless of their description, they are thought to be ugly goblins with horns and long tails that look like small, devilish little creatures. It is believed that these Kalikantzaras, or Christmas goblins, stay underground, sawing the trunk of the tree that holds up the earth so that it will collapse. So there's like this idea that there's like this tree of life from the center of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And these Christmas goblins want to saw it down and collapse the earth.
Oh no.
However, when the final part of the trunk is about to be sawed, Christmas arrives and they're able to come to the surface and roam the earth.
Okay.
So they're roaming around, they're doing sneaky things, they're wreaking havoc. But once January 6th arrives, which we talked about in your first story, they were kind of screwed because this was, as we were talking about, the day that Jesus was baptized. And then Jesus would force the Kalikantzaras back underground.
Oh, okay.
In their absence, they would see that the tree would have healed itself, so they would have to start working all over again until next Christmas.
Damn.
That's the lore. Folklore around the Kalikantzaras can be found in Greece, across the Balkans, as well as in Cyprus and Turkey.
Mm.
These legends come from ancient pagan traditions, but have been adapted to fit with Christianity over time. Some believe these creatures to be death spirits, and others believe them to be small bugs associated with evil spirits, which were known to destroy crops.
Oh.
So there's lots of different versions of this, lots of different thoughts, lots of different ideas.
Yeah.
People believed that the Kalikantzaras would troll in the darkness, entering people's homes after they'd gone to sleep and the fire had gone out. So, long ago in Greece, people would keep their fires burning throughout the entire holiday season to prevent these creatures from entering their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, people believed that the mission of these goblins was to steal children born throughout this time and turn them into demons like themselves. So, families would use protective measures to chase them away, such as binding newborn babies in straw and garlic.
Damn!
Yeah, and at first I thought that maybe you would have been part of that because of the timing of this holiday situation.
Uh-huh.
But actually no, because it's from the 23rd till the 6th. Gosh. So you're not a demon. You're fine. You're not part of the
when your sister thinks you're a demon.
Oh my gosh. So that's kind of all about the Christmas goblins that I could find. There's lots of different stories, lots of different tales. Yeah. So many of them overlap as we kind of figured out today.
Yeah.
And with a lot of these holiday stories, I can't help but think about how the creatures or monsters that we're talking about are often ugly, deformed, vicious, mm-hmm. evil, and non-Christian entities.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all kind of lumped into this category of other. They are stories told to keep children and adults scared and worried about what would happen to them if they didn't follow the word of the Christian God, or if they weren't morally righteous, or if they didn't follow social norms. I'm obviously not a scholar in historical holiday folklore and legend, but I've seen a lot of thesis papers on these different stories.
Yeah.
And there are many ways that we can read and understand these stories.
Mm-hmm.
For example, through lenses of disability, racism, stereotyping, and discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a general PSA that next time you decide to tell your children, friends, or family a spooky holiday story, spooky in quote, consider the common narratives that we follow and think about ways to disrupt or change them or just bring general awareness to them.
Yeah.
Even, for example, like the Grinch
mm-hmm.
is a very actual like anti-Semitic character, and there's a lot of thesis papers about this. So is what I've been told, which kind of like changes my view, obviously, on the Grinch enterprise as mm-hmm. a whole. And I would like to do more like reading and research into that. But yeah, just another tidbit that mm-hmm. I wanted to share. So think about your stories a little deeper and think about what they're actually saying.
Right.
All that to be said, it's still really fun to talk about these stories
mm-hmm.
and share them with you and yeah. talk about holiday freaks and creeps.
Yeah.
Because we love the freaks and creeps.
Yeah, exactly. So, there are people.
There are people.
That's our holiday.
We're also freaks and creeps.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Happy or winter, happy December. Hope you get a little bit of time off and you enjoy that time off. And yeah. if not, I hope you're being paid double or triple time.
Yeah. And so. Also, maybe we'll see some snow, but...
Maybe.
Global warming is saying no, so...
Climate change is... in charge.
Yeah.
So
truly.
Who knows?
Who knows?
But. Anyway, you can find all of our you can find all of the resources for each of our episodes in the description below.
You can email us if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or critiques
yes.
at ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Instagram at
ghoulsocietypod.
You can follow us on TikTok.
ghoul.societypod.
And that's it. We hope you have a great holiday and we will see you in 2026, baby.
Yeah, and hopefully all of you were good and get candy and not coal and sticks.
Yeah. No whipping unless you want it.
Wow.
No kink shaming here. So
yeah, exactly.
Whipping, consensual whipping is approved Fine. By us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Love it.
Okay.
On bye. That note, bye.
Bye.
So I didn't look up the pronunciation because why would I? So it's Pierre. Okay.
Ah, oh, Jamie.
I think it's fine. Look, I'll look it up. Yeah, I was right. Pierre Fouettard.
It's gonna fall from the sky like a bird in my eye. A pizza pie. I don't know why.
Okay, you got one more?
No.
Oh, you just have your two.
I said I have two.
Oh, I forgot. Okay. Damn, I should have started then. That's and then okay. we could have been bam, bam, bam.
Oh, all wait. Right. Do you have three?
Yeah.
Oops.
The last awkward. One I have to show you. Or share with you, sorry.
Awkward.